Hi there, welcome into this podcast. And once again at the weekend, William Mullally joined us, our film critic, to talk all things movies. And we had a real good dive into the latest Inside Out 2, featuring all those emotions that come to the surface. It really is a great conversation. And we even hear from some of the psychologists and psychiatrists behind this particular movie. Do enjoy the podcast and join me live on the show every Sunday, 12 midday through 3 p.m., only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Lloyd's Sunday Lunch on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back into the show, and it's movies once again with the arts and culture editor of The National, the one and only William Mullally. Now, we touched on this movie last week, but it's since become the biggest opening in the world. Since Barbie, we're talking about Inside Out 2, William. This has taken the planet by storm.
Yeah, honestly, I feel that it is owed so much to the love that people have for that original. You know, it's just this wonderful story of this 11-year-old girl, Riley, and the emotions that exist inside of her head. But I think this one does a really brilliant job of expanding upon that. Yes, it only picks up 2 years later. You know, she's gone from an 11-year-old to a 13-year-old, and you wonder how much can really change in that time. But I think any parent knows that a lot can change in that time. You know, this is very much a story of all of a sudden she's hitting adolescence. Her hormones are raging, and all of a sudden there's these new emotions that are entering her thinking as she's thinking all of a sudden about, oh, I'm making new friends, I need to think about my future, I need to think about my social circle.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden into her mind pops embarrassment and anxiety and starts to overwhelm the other emotions. And it's funny, it's true, but it actually, and I was talking to the psychologist behind the film, the one who consulted and gave them all of the information on the latest thinking on the brain in terms of scientific research, and they were telling me this film is actually the product of the latest understanding of how the brain works and how emotions work. And in a lot of ways, we think about things totally differently. I mean, think of it this way. A lot of times, the way that we talk about our mental health is always about how to be happy. Right?
Yeah, right.
We think about chasing joy, doing things that make us feel good. We talk about anxiety like it's this evil thing, you know, this thing that's hurting us. We need to get rid of our anxiety and get happy. And in fact, that's actually an unhealthy way to look at it. And that's what makes this film so interesting, because yes, anxiety shows up. And at the beginning, she's the big bad. You know, she's ruining everything. She's coming in and taking over. And all the other emotions that we know from the first film, like sadness and joy, are overwhelmed by anxiety. But in fact, it has a much more inclusive message of all of the emotions. It's about the way that, yes, even envy, even, yes, anxiety, even embarrassment, boredom, these all play a key role in shaping our happiness, ultimately. The negative leads to the good, and we can't have the good without the bad. And I think in a lot of ways, that's revolutionary. And, you know, speaking to Lisa Damore, who's a clinical psychologist, written a lot of books on the development of adolescent children, and Dr. Keltner, who's he's a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, the head of the science center there that researches emotion. He was also the key person behind the first film. They found that this film was, like, I think not only moves things forward, but it presents it in such a way that even they were crying by the end of the film. So I think that makes this film so much more interesting to me.
What we do clinically is to try to help people recognize their shortcomings while still holding themselves at a reasonable level of self-regard. You know, while, you know, being able to say, yes, I have imperfections, but I'm still a valuable and worthy person. Like, that's, you know, what we're always trying to achieve in our clinical work. And so, you know, when I saw that up on the big screen, I was like, there it is, that's it. I don't know that it came from me, but it was certainly a conversation we had. And I have to tell you, when, you know, Doctor and I were just at the premiere on Monday in LA, that scene where they're all hugging, I started crying. I mean, I've seen it before, like, but in the theater, I mean, I was just like, bingo, bam, they did it. It is absolutely gorgeous.
How about for you, Dr. Keltner?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, the basic, they take the science so seriously, you know, and so over the 14 years I've been talking to the makers of these films, like, you know, they are really curious about what the science says. So, you know, as I talked to Kelsey and Meg and then other members of the team, you know, there's a lot of work on what anxiety does to consciousness and the mind. And it makes you think about what could go wrong and catastrophize. And that's portrayed. That's well known. Yeah, there's really interesting work on envy. There's one kind of envy that leads you to undermine people, which is problematic and unethical. There's another kind of envy. I mean, envy is a very human emotion that is not a sin. It leads you to work harder and to do things well. That's good for young people. But I think most critically, you know, the scene that moved you, the emotions hugging each other, there's a new literature that says it's not all about joy. We need all of these emotions in a complex mixture, right? Aristotle wrote about that we need all the emotions in moderation and in the right way. And I think the film tells it, you know, that it's a reminder for people seeking happiness that you're also going to need some anxiety. You're going to need some stress. You're going to need a little bit of envy. That's okay. And, you know, the big one for me, there's a new literature on acceptance of emotion. You know, it comes out of contemplative traditions, meditation traditions, but also emotion regulation science that says, don't condemn your emotions. Don't give them pharmaceuticals right away. Just listen to them, right? Accept them, engage with them. And the movie, you know, when I saw it, just got the sense of that with the beliefs about herself at the end, I was crying. You know, I was like, wish I had told my daughters that 10 years ago. What a great lesson.
Well, there we have the psychologists who were brought in to advise on this movie Inside Out 2. I think, William, with that description as well that you just gave, you might consider a career in psychology. I mean, who is this film going to appear to? Is it the adolescents, as she's an adolescent now? Is it younger audiences? Is it adults? You know, where's the target audience? Because obviously they've hit the spot, being the biggest opening weekend of the year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think because it definitely isn't... A friend was telling me that they took their three-year-old to go see it.
Yeah, no.
And at the end, the three-year-old's just like, but where's the cars? Where's the cars? So I don't think it's necessarily one for the youngest kids. It is colorful and funny, but I do think it falls into all ages. Like, older kids, I think, will find a lot to relate to. If you're a 13-year-old, you know, they had actual 13-year-olds watching this film to make sure it was as true to that experience as possible.
Yeah.
But I think a lot like Toy Story. You know, I think, like, if you look at Toy Story 3, when you're watching that as a kid, it's a certain way, but it's a different kind of emotional when you're looking back at that phase in your life. You know, when you're thinking to when you had to give up your toys as a child and move on to the next phase. I think that there's a lot of truth in here, too. So I think it's definitely one for all ages. What's interesting to me, another thing that I was talking to Lisa and Docker about, is when the next key part of brain development would beget another Inside Out film. And they were telling me, actually, that at 18 to 19 years old, that's when your brain starts to change all over again. That's when you start to fall in love. You start to think about your morality, your place in the world, you think about your politics, you know, what you care about.
Yeah.
That happens then. And then when you become a parent, that's when your brain completely shifts again. So if we're going to have Inside Out 3 and 4, they should be set at those points in life. At that point, it's no longer really a kid's film. I would love to see those films. I don't know. The question is, should they keep doing them past that point? But personally, I think with this film, I would have a million Inside Outs, because I do think that they're valuable, not just for entertainment. I think they're valuable for understanding ourselves.
Here's the trailer then for Inside Out 2.
Our little girl's growing up so fast. Ow.
Sorry.
It should be nothing but smooth sailing.
Hello. Ah! I'm anxiety. Where can I put my stuff?
A new emotion.
Oh, I'm sorry. We wanted to make such a good first impression.
What do you mean, we?
I'm Envy.
What's your name, big fella?
That's embarrassment.
Welcome to headquarters, embarrassment. Oh, we're doing a fit. No. Oh, nope. Going high. Oh, you got a real sweaty palm there, buddy.
I know change is scary. Let's do this.
Hey, Riley!
But we need new friends or we'll be totally alone in high school. Out with the old, in with the new. Riley's life requires more sophisticated emotions than all of you.
You can't just bottle us up!
We are suppressed emotions!
Well, there it is, the trailer for the movie that's really doing big things at the box office around the world. Biggest opening of the year so far, dealing with all these emotions coming into the world. And I was just reading an article just before this interview, William, that apparently there's a competition going on where you can win yourself a stay at the Inside Out kind of, you know, HQ, and go and spend the night there with all these different emotions. Oh, that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
I think that absolutely would be fun. But honestly, you know, it does seem like a pretty stressful place. I don't think I would want to be behind the helm of a 13-year-old girl. But I think, you know, they bring a lot of joy and mirth to it. But yeah, this is serious business, manning someone's brain.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to have to do it.
All right, then. So that's Inside Out 2. Well worth a watch by all accounts. And we'll certainly come away with a few things to think about. There's no two ways about that. We're going to come back with more movies with William Mullally.
You're listening to Lloyd's Sunday Lunch on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The UAE's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back. We're talking movies. We've looked at Inside Out 2, which is the big talker at the moment. House of the Dragon opened, of course, on our smaller screens, and this is getting a lot of hype. And what's the latest that we know about this one?
So the first episode, I think, had an incredibly... I did tease this last week.
Yeah.
But it did have an incredibly dramatic moment. I have seen episode 2. I can't say too much. That's the one that's airing. It'll be up on OSN Plus Monday morning at 4 a.m. But honestly, it does move things forward. And I think in a lot of ways, it's the character of Aegon here that steps forward. Because if we met him at the... So, yeah, to set it up, the Targaryen family, the dragon-wielding family, 200 years before, or maybe 300 years, before Game of Thrones, are at war with each other. And we have two sides of the family who are facing off. And now we have this young king who has usurped the throne from his older sister. And he's a bit of a jerk, but when we meet him in the first season.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that I love about this universe is that no one is ever just a villain or just a hero. You know, everyone has these different shades. And I think what I like most about where this is going is, yes, I think the first season probably sided with one side a bit too much. You know, it did seem like there was the good guys and the bad guys. I'm glad that we're finally getting to a point when we can see the humanity of the other side. There's, I think, goodness, and there's, I think, a heart, even within the darkest characters, the characters who seemed the most detestable earlier in the story. And, you know, I was speaking to the actor who plays Aegon, and I think that he was telling me that he sits down every single morning when they get on set, or he's doing the makeup, and he has a special Aegon playlist that he puts on, and I had to make him pull out his phone and tell me exactly what he's listening to when he's getting into character, and here's what he told me.
Thank you so much.
Okie dokie. Let me find it. Oh god, there's so many. You have to sift through them. We might be here a while.
I take your time.
Okay. We've got Empress by Morningsiders, Shuffle by Bombay Bicycle Club, every Eminem song you've ever heard. We've got Rachmaninoff. We've got Stiff Little Fingers, Sex Pistols, Rolling Stones, Tame Impala, Talking Heads. I think you get the idea. It's all over the place, mate. There's not Bob Dylan, loads of that. There's not really a theme. It's all kind of... Sometimes it's lyrically driven, sometimes it's sort of rhythmically driven. It's whatever mood I need to be in, whatever needs to sort of hype me up or calm me down, I think.
Is there one song you think is a great window into him?
Hard Rains Are Gonna Fall, Bob Dylan.
Well, there we go, the musical side then of the playlist of the House of the Dragon. Now we know what they listen to get into the zone, and here's the trailer.
Errors were made in the hours following King Viserys' death.
The war be fought. Many will die. And the victor will eventually ascend the throne.
There is no war so hateful to the gods. A war between kin. And no war so bloody as a war between dragons.
Ah!
Well, there's the trailer of House of the Dragon. As William said, he can't say too much about the second episode, but when can we see that?
So this one's Monday morning on OSN.
Lovely. Now, I want to touch on Kevin Costner. He's been in the news quite a lot of late, not only with his acting, but also his dating as well. But anyway, Kevin Costner, he got a standing ovation at the Cannes Film Festival for Horizon, an American Saga. Sam Worthington in this one as well. This is a Western. I'm intrigued as to what the appeal is for this one, William.
I am very hyped for this film. I'm really glad that it's coming to cinemas here. I don't know if anyone's going to watch it here.
Right. Well, you and I will.
At the same time, I wouldn't think Yellowstone would be popular here. But whenever I talk to OSN, they say it's one of their biggest shows, and it's huge. Hmm. So maybe it's just because we have that desert spirit. You know, I do think that maybe going out to the desert here does have a bit of a feel of an old Western.
Yeah.
At times when I'm down in the Liwa Desert in Abu Dhabi, for example. And so I think for Kevin, it's not just about the setting, it's about just the possibility of what Westerns bring. You know, I think it's an amazing setting to just explore character, because in the West, there's no one that can save you but you. You know, there's no society. There's pure heroes and villains. There's just pure...
You're on your own.
And I think he's always gone back to that genre for that reason. I think it's just a great place, and I think that he's done so much great work within that genre. So I know this is an absolute labor of love for him. He put all his own money for it. He put his heart and soul into it. He was even saying this week, you know, he cast his son in it, and people were criticizing him for that. He's like, well, my son is a beautiful boy. So at the end of the day, this is reflective of his heart, for better or for worse. You know, he might not be thinking with his, you know, his business brain, right, but he's thinking with his heart. And that, I love that sort of a film. You know, I really want to see something that someone deeply cared about in an era when it feels like some of these movies could have been cranked out by ChatGPT. You know, I want to see all the good and the bad of a person expressing their soul on screen, and that's definitely what we're getting here with Kevin Costner's latest.
Here's the trailer.
Ain't from here. Something you want to say? I will tell you this. In these territories, men will come try you. They will take from you until you are wiped clean from this land. I'm just saying, that's something you might want to keep in mind.
You think? You and I are standing guard in one of the last great open spaces.
That looks like a promising place.
The place I might be able to see myself. You just have to stand at the river, and you can see what the men and the women up there see. That's what drove us across the ocean to this country in the first place. Hope.
Well, there's the trailer for Horizon, an American Saga. Kevin Costner there, a labor of love for him. Finally, before I let you go, William, here's a fair old pairing with Austin Butler and Tom Hardy. It's not here yet, but it's coming in the next week or so. The Bike Riders. What have you heard about this?
Honestly, I am really excited for this film just because I love when Tom Hardy pushes himself in weird directions. And I think he's always had a fascination with Marlon Brando. It feels like he's channeling Marlon Brando and the Wild Ones here 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he gets sometimes criticized because he'll just make weird decisions. He'll just make up a character. He'll do an accent that's not accurate to how any human on Earth speaks. That's the fun of movies.
Exactly.
I'm not sitting here to watch a documentary. I'm sitting here to see someone have, like, put their all into a character, put their imagination, even if it's the imagination of an accent. I think Tom is an incredibly creative actor, and I think Austin is someone as well who just pushes himself to weird directions. I think we saw him as Fade Rautha in Dune Part 2 do amazing stuff. I don't think any human on Earth has ever behaved like that. But I think you could see, you know, how passionate and how much fun he has when he puts his all into these characters. We've seen how much playing Elvis transformed him.
So yeah.
I think putting these two actors together, two actors who will just give their all to a role, for better or for worse, is a must-see for me.
Here's the trailer for The Bike Riders.
From the beginning?
Yes, please.
It was the golden age of bike riders.
I never felt so out of place in all my life. That's when I saw him for the first time. It took my breath away.
I'm Benny.
5 weeks later, I married him. I thought I could change him, you know? Not to be different, but to be, I don't know, like he's wild.
Well, there's a trailer then for The Bike Riders. As always, William, thank you for joining us on the show. I'm feeling very emotional after your Inside Out 2 chat. I don't know which emotions are going to be jumping out the most, but that is definitely, I think, a must-see this weekend. William Mullally, the Arts and Culture Editor of The National, thanks for joining us once again.
Talk soon, buddy.
This is Lloyd's Sunday Lunch
on Dubai Eye 103.8.